time for the FTN NBA podcast. Breaking down all the news, stats, trades, and more from the exciting basketball world. Here are your hosts, Adam Pfeiffer and Zach Graham.
What's up, everybody? FTN NBA podcast for Monday, January the 23rd. Sports are football. Football's over. We don't talk about football. So the fact that we have this basketball podcast every, multiple times a week again is great. Adam Pfeiffer here. Zach Graham with me as always. Zach, how was your weekend? Couldn't be worse than mine.
Yeah, I think it was not even really comparable. Weekend was good. Got to see a couple shows. Got to see...
Yeah, man, rub it in.
Got to see my guys, my old team.
I got to see a show too, by the way. It was, led by Joe Burrow.
Hey, at least you didn't, pay, what I assume was an exorbitant number for a ticket to that game, go stand in the snow that was just coming down the whole game and then have to watch it. At least you got to watch it at home in the friendly confines, with your heater on and everything. And yeah, it never feels good. Obviously when your team bows out, especially when you have such high expectations, high hopes, but, I said this last night and I know you're still recovering. It's going to be a couple of days, maybe a couple of weeks, but
honestly, like I joke about it, but after last year, the 13 seconds and everything,
yeah,
I'm okay right now. Like they didn't deserve to win. So I really, but yeah, like in comparison to last year, it's like, I wouldn't be on this podcast if this was last year. Right. Like, there's no shot. So
yeah. But I got to go see, couple of comedy shows this weekend. Got to see my guys play, and they won on a buzzer beater three that we banked in. So been struggling a little bit this season. It lost a big piece in Coach Zach Graham leaving last year. But no, those guys, they needed a win, and it was fun to watch it go down as it did. And then yesterday, as you were watching that AFC divisional playoff game unfold, I was doing the solo stream. I think you texted me like, yeah, this sucks. I was like, hey, if you want to talk hoops, you can come on the stream. You're like,
the funny thing is too, like I led with that saying, I just want to talk about basketball now. And you said, come on the stream. I was like, give me a day.
Yeah. I was like,
I'll take a day. But no, I am very excited for this episode because we kind of alluded to it last week. Not only will we be doing a 2022 NBA draft redraft on today's episode, we will also be doing a 2021 NBA draft redraft because there's a lot of talk about the sophomore class right now. Mm-hmm. A handful of players maybe have been disappointing. Obviously, Cade's injury has changed things, but we'll be doing redrafts for both those. The top 10 players from each draft, Zach and I are just going to go back and forth. We're not going to even, take into consideration which teams were up at that spot. So, fit-wise, it doesn't matter. It's just ranking the 10 best players, essentially, from the last two draft classes. And obviously, a lot's going to change still, and a lot already has changed. So it'll be interesting to see where our minds are at. But Zach, you aren't the only one that's been on the trade machine, apparently, the last 48 to 72 hours. Uh-huh. We had a trade. I don't think it's exactly official yet, but it's going to be official by this afternoon.
It is now.
So it is now official. Yeah. So... And it's perfect timing, too, because we normally try to start recording these around 12. Mm-hmm. And you yesterday said, can we do 1 o'clock? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. And it worked out because we wouldn't have got the news, although it probably would have been just a live reaction anyway. But, a team that's always going to be in the thick of it in trade talks, the Los Angeles Lakers. Mm-hmm. I mean, was it going to be Buddy Hield? Was it going to be, Bogdanovich? Was it going to be maybe like someone from Chicago? Ends up being Rui Hachimura. He is now going to be traded to LA in exchange for Kendrick Nunn and 3 second-round picks. And I'll let you kind of exactly go into detail where those picks are coming from. But first, initial reaction to the move. I mean, we saw reports that Rui could be on the move because there's kind of a logjam at the forward position in Washington. They've had a lot of Porzingis, Gafford starting fives, and of course you have Denny, Rui, Kuzma all at the forward position. It's an interesting buy low. I mean, this is what, the ninth overall pick a couple years ago. 6'8", 6'9", has length. is capable of shooting the three, although the numbers don't really show great three-point shooting. So what's your initial reaction to the trade?
I think ultimately, and it's certainly not a hot take here, I imagine there's plenty of other people firing off very similar takes or reactions to this trade from the Lakers side of things. I think it's a good trade. Like I would rather have Rui Hachimura on my team than Kendrick Nunn. The Lakers also, like you talk about positional logjam, they had way too many point guards. And I still think they could afford to maybe get rid of one or like maybe two for one for a better point guard. Because, you know, even though they still have what Patrick Beverley, Dennis Schroeder, Russell Westbrook, like not super satisfied with any of those guys, even though like Russ, especially lately, has been fantastic and has completely bought in, it appears, to what they're asking of him on this unique roster that they have built there in LA. I don't think from the standpoint of this season, it moves the needle much for me in terms of their chances. Like they're not with this trade, right? The Lakers are not going from dark horse to contender, right? And not even close, but they're also not like, they're definitely not closer to the dumb idiot tier. Because I think Rui is somebody that they can absolutely slot into the rotation, whether it's a starting role, a role off the bench. Obviously, Anthony Davis is still out right now, so we kind of have to
they
wait
said
for
what? Like, I don't know if I misread it. Mm-hmm. Did they say he'll be back prior to the All-Star break or after the All-Star break?
I believe it was supposed to be this Friday.
That's what I'm saying. I believe it was prior.
Yeah, January 28th.
And like, Rui can play the three or the four, mm-hmm. and like
he better be the four.
I agree, but I'm saying like if it came down to it, especially because they've had some injuries to the wings with Lonnie and Austin Reeves.
Sure.
But like there's still some, like I don't think we're done seeing some of these LeBron at the five lineups. I know Thomas Bryant's played well. Wendell Gabriel's played a little bit better lately. And of course you want Davis back, but like he can be perfectly fine at the four. Like we said, he probably should be playing the four in those occasions where LeBron's at the five. So I like the move too. Again, before I break down kind of how I think he fits, talk about exactly those second round draft picks and where they're coming from, because that obviously makes, you know, a difference.
Yeah, so it's three second round picks and Kendrick Nunn for Rui. The second rounders that the Wizards will be receiving are one in 2023, so this coming draft, and that is through Chicago. So it was Chicago's second rounder that the Lakers had, which the way Chicago is trending and potentially, you know, could move some of their pieces and fall even further down the standings, that pick is likely to end up in the 30s. So I think that is certainly can be a valuable asset. You know, we've seen plenty of players go in that range and have, you know, very, very successful careers. Like probably the most famous one over the last decade would be Draymond Green. Forgive me if I'm missing somebody, like Jokic, right? But I think he was like 41 or something, maybe even later. But Herb Jones 2 years ago, right? Who maybe we'll talk about in the redraft here in a couple minutes. So
Jokic was during the Taco Bell commercial, right?
Yeah. Yes, correct. Yes, that's a great recall there. Then they get the 2029 second rounder from the Lakers. Who cares at this point? Like if it was a first and unprotected or even light protections, we would have a lot more to say about that. But a second rounder 6+ years down the road doesn't do much for me at this point. And then they get a second rounder in 2028, which reportedly is the less favorable between the Wizards and the Lakers second round picks in 2028. What's interesting is Fanspo, the site where I you know, that's my favorite trade machine on the internet, says that 2028 Lakers pick, the Magic actually hold the right to swap there, which to me, that's what makes sense here in terms of less favorable. So the Wizards could potentially grab that pick. Kendrick Nunn on an expiring, I'm not surprised if he just gets like straight waived by this Wizards team. You know, another player we won't talk about in this redraft, or if we do talk about him, will only be for the fact that it seems like a complete swing and a miss, the definition of a whiff on Johnny Davis last year at the point guard position. But we know they you know, the Wizards brought in Monty Morris. They brought in DeLon Wright. So it's not like I don't think I'm not reading this as the Wizards are going to bring Kendrick Nunn in to play him at all. And again, both of these guys, not just Kendrick Nunn, on expiring deals, Rui Hachimura coming off his rookie deal, will be a restricted free agent next season. And it was reported by Woj 6 minutes ago that the Lakers are trading for Rui with the intention of signing him to an extension this summer. So I'd imagine, based off the personal issues that Rui has been going through that haven't been detailed to my knowledge, or haven't been, like, there hasn't been a deep dive on, like, what was actually going on there. I think there was rumors, or maybe just Rui himself, saying that the Olympics, which were back in Tokyo, right, 2 summers ago, obviously he was representing the home country of Japan in that tournament. It took a lot out of him. And then I think he was going through some other personal stuff where he missed like half of the season last year. He's also missed some extended time on and off this season, and his shooting has not really, like, he kind of flashed last year with like 40%+ 3-point mm-hmm. shooting on right around 3 attempts per game, I believe. That's dropped right back down to low 30s where he's been the first two, or where he was, I should say, the first 2 years of his career. So based on him not really, I mean, this is a guy who started every game he appeared in for Washington his rookie season and his sophomore season, and then obviously has only appeared in, I think, like 55 to 60 games over the last two, if that. And so I think the fact that Rui's decline in Washington probably makes it, barring some sort of Rui Hachimura renaissance or explosion here in Los Angeles, which is not likely to happen with those three high usage guys in Russ, LeBron, and Anthony Davis on the team, they can probably extend Rui again if that's what he wants to do as a restricted free agent. They can probably get him for a pretty modest number. But again, restricted free agency, he can sell, if another team's like, oh, we got to get our hands on Rui, they could sign him to an offer sheet that I could see the Lakers either not wanting to match or maybe just financially not really being able to do. So it'd be interesting to watch how that develops for him on a team where there's not really a clear path to him raising his value. And then, of course, we could go into, what does this mean for the Wizards? And are they going to now extend Kyle Kuzma, et cetera? Like,
that's what it sounds like. I think Woj actually reported like right after that with this move, like there was like Washington and Rui couldn't kind of get together and agree on a long-term extension or anything like that.
It does seem like he or like his camp, whatever you want to say, and like the front office in Washington, who like, nobody has many good things to say about them. I know our buddy Joe Metz was already firing off Washington front office jokes after this tweet happened, or after this trade happened, I should say. They've certainly cleared up a little bit of that logjam you talked about getting Rui out of there.
Yeah, I mean, I think Porzingis is also going to miss what, like, he's like week to week right now, so that doesn't help. But yeah, the fit's interesting because obviously it was, what, 13 starts in 2021-2022 where he shot 44% from three. That's obviously the outlier.
Yeah.
34% this season, 33% his sophomore season, 28% his rookie season. Obviously, we know this LA team needs shooting, so that's where I'm like, okay, they still, if there's any moves left for them, like, they need to add shooting. That's why they've been linked to Buddy Hield, Bojan Bogdanovic, you know, whoever.
Right.
The interesting thing, though, when you look at Rui's numbers on threes from like above the break, so like any three that's not in the corner, he's shooting like 20-something%. He's been really bad, 29%. But he is shooting 42% off corner threes, which is like 70th percentile in the league according to Cleaning the Glass. So like, if you're just kind of sitting in the corner and spotting up, and if he's been able to hit those corner threes playing with LeBron and Russ, that obviously, you know, benefits. And I just think at the end of the day, it was a move for the Lakers to say, you know what, it's, you know, 3 second round picks. It's sort of buying low on a former top 10, you know, overall selection on a team for a team that just straight up needs more talent. So I have no problem with it. I do think it is interesting on the Washington side because like Kuzma's obviously been linked to, you know, with trade rumors. It doesn't feel like anybody can trade. No, I don't think they can trade for Beal. But yeah, like if Kuzma were to be traded, there'd be, I don't know, 28 teams maybe that would be interested. I mean, most of the league, I think, would have a lot of interest. From what Woj reported right after the trade, it sounds like that they're very high on holding on to Kyle Kuzma, but we'll see. What do you think for Washington before we move on?
I mean, I think it's fine. Again, I think the best thing they got back at this point is that 2023 second rounder from Chicago. And again, if Kuzma is a guy that they want to keep around, then they had to get rid of Rui for something because they were going to lose him for nothing this offseason. So I think on both sides, I would say good deal. Seems fair. And it doesn't really move the needle for either team at this point. Although I do think it raises the Lakers' floor. Right? Because to move a guy who's not really in the rotation, he's certainly not in the rotation when that team is healthy, when you get Reeves back, when you get Lonnie Walker back. I think it's good on both sides. I don't think I can hate on either side too hard.
Yeah, I tend to agree. We'll see. I think we're going to have two episodes this week. I think we're going to do one because I'm on vacation this weekend. So we're going to do give you a couple of days this week to, compile a bunch of trades, and we're going to do a
portfolio.
we're going to do a huge kind of trade deadline special type thing where we, talk about some of the players that have really been talked about, some moves that make sense. So we'll do that. But for today, redrafting the 2021 and 2022 NBA drafts, top 10 selections. Again, it doesn't matter where the team was drafted. We're not even taking teams into consideration. It's just if we were drafting again today, who would be the top 10 selections in order? Let's start with 2021, Zach. And look, I'm taking the first selection because I said so.
I figured you might.
So obviously things have changed, right? We had Cade Cunningham, who was the obvious number one selection in that draft, has dealt with injuries. Obviously was hurt a little bit in his rookie season, and now is missing the rest of his sophomore season here in 2022. Mobley was great in his rookie season. Scotty Barnes was great in his rookie season, won Rookie of the Year. Had been struggling in his sophomore year, but has really picked it up as of late. I think it's still pretty clear that one of these three should be the number one draft pick. But if anybody's shocked that I'm taking Evan Mobley number one, I don't know what to tell you. I think Mobley would be the number one. I just think Evan Mobley, and kind of works out that he had 38 points, a career high over the weekend, on zero free throws and zero three-pointers. Mm-hmm. Granted, it was without the Giannis Antetokounmpo Milwaukee Bucks, or against the Giannis list Bucks, but Brook Lopez and his team have been elite at rim protection, and we talked about it. Brook Lopez would probably be the second defensive player of the year candidate, and Mobley kind of got whatever he wanted against him. So it's really impressive. Obviously, for me, if Evan Mobley can just put on a little bit of weight and add a little bit of post moves to his offensive game, the ceiling is just unheard of because, in my opinion, he's already one of the top 10 defensive players in basketball. I've talked about his really underrated facilitating, especially out of the short pick and roll for months now. And again, there's just he's 21, man. I know all these guys are obviously young, but Mobley hasn't even come close to his ceiling. And that's pretty, excitingly frightening. Mm-hmm. So it's close still. I think Cade, when healthy, is still easily, you can make the argument he's the best player in this class. We just haven't seen that. And we have to kind of take that into consideration when we're redrafting. And I just think Mobley, we talk about players that could be unicorns in the NBA. He's not going to be to the Giannis level or anything like that, but he's kind of in that archetype. And especially if he's taking a little bit more threes this season, still not a massive part of his game. Mm-hmm. And I also don't get this, there's been a lot of talk lately of, we really need to see Evan Mobley do more on the offensive side of the ball. I'm like, on one hand, I understand why you're saying that, but he's playing with he's playing with two of the top 10 to 12 guards in the entire league. How much do you really want to ask from him? But we saw that a little bit with no Mitchell last game, 38 points. So am I crazy, Zach? Am I a homer? I'm going Evan Mobley, number one overall.
Well, you are a homer.
As
am
sorry,
I,
am I crazy?
On my big board here, we had Evan Mobley number one down here in Texas. Okay. So we would have snatched him up very quickly at two if you had not Or I guess at one, if you had not forced the number one pick to your franchise. And number two, though, here, I'll take Scotty Barnes. Obviously, I feel like we bring up not just Evan Mobley, but Scotty Barnes on like almost every podcast, maybe every other podcast. And it's for good reason, because both of those guys, as sophomores, are still playing massive roles on their teams. Obviously, the results for Toronto this season have left a lot to be desired for that fan base. But Scotty himself, we've talked, and we're certainly not the only ones, to point out that he really hasn't taken that step forward this year. But as the Rookie of the Year, and debatable, certainly on this podcast, but as the Rookie of the Year last year, he's essentially playing the same, which is still really good. You know, under 35 minutes a game this year. He played just over 35 last year. His shooting is down like a touch. He was 49% from the field last year on 12.5 shots per game. He's 46% from the field this year on almost 13.5. So taking like slightly more shot attempts from three, he was 30% last year. He's 30% this year. 0.03 more 3-point attempts. Slightly improved his free throw percentage. Rebounds are the same. Assists are up 4.8 per game compared to 3.5 last year. Turnovers remain just about the same. So yeah, I'll just take what we thought Scotty Barnes was last year, because he's still that. And I don't think just because we haven't seen that massive leap statistically from Scotty, again, 21
years. We're starting to, though, potentially.
Well, so yeah, I was going to say.
The month of January, he's been really good.
Well, and let's narrow it down, not just from January 1st, but just the last seven games. Which
I thought you were going to go back to your favorite date, December 1st.
No, I just think I think I may have taken Cade or somebody else here at two prior to this run, but like it may just be recency bias, but Scotty Barnes over the last seven games, 21 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal and a half, a block and a half per game, 1.9 turnovers, for the amount that a guy like him handles the ball, will take sub 2 on the turnovers and all of those other numbers, 53% from the field, 39% from three, albeit that is a very, like, Scotty Barnes is not shooting a ton of threes because he's not a great shooter. 5 of 13, though, is more than passable.
He's getting I'm sure you've seen this, he's getting the Ben Simmons defensive treatment.
Yeah, as he should.
There's been so many possessions where he's all alone at the top of the arc, mm-hmm. and then the closest defender is at the free throw line, maybe probably behind it. Yeah. And I get it, but yeah, like even if you want like the last seven games you mentioned, mm-hmm. even if you want like a little bit of a larger sample size, in the month of January alone, 18.7 points, 7.4 rebounds, 5.3 assists, 1.4 blocks, 1.3 steals. And like, I've talked about this, Pascal Siakam is one of my favorite players in the entire league. I absolutely love him. But if you give Scotty Barnes the keys to this offense, and he's, you know, because I've talked about my, you know, the questions I have about whether Scotty Barnes can really reach his ceiling alongside Siakam, because Siakam has been handling the ball even more this season because, you know, Fred's been a little bit banged up and hasn't played as well. And like, because Scotty can't really shoot, that's going to hurt him. But if you give him, you know, say Siakam gets moved at the deadline or whatever, like Scotty Barnes in the Siakam role, or just with Siakam not there, could easily be the best player in this draft class, because you could easily make the case he's the best player in this draft class still. As much as I love Mobley, like Scotty's amazing. So, you know, coming out of college, his passing was great. He's shown that ability in the NBA. Yeah, I think Scotty Barnes, for me, on mine, he was number two for me as well. So we are in agreement. Number three, I'm still going Cade here. Part of me wanted to go Franz, and a lot of people might put Franz one or two, honestly, and I think mm-hmm. it's totally reasonable. He's been fantastic. At least this year, you can make the case maybe he's been the best. But Cade's still, like, for me, it comes down to the fact that it's enough to kind of bump him to three, because Mobley and Scotty could be, like, generational, maybe not generational, but, like, borderline generational prospects. But, like, it's not like Cade is three and as opposed to when he was one because of performance. It's really just been injuries. Like, he's been fine when he's been on the court. And for me, like, there's really not much analysis needed. It's just, we need to see Cade Cunningham healthy.
Yeah, I don't think there's I don't think there's just enough of a sample size, and maybe people would scoff at that because Cade, in the 76 games that he's appeared in his first two seasons, almost 33 minutes per game. So you've got almost a full season on the books for Cade through his first two. Obviously, he's out for the rest of this year. I couldn't get there, and I guess I can give you a glimpse. This will maybe send you guessing on who I had above him. I had Cade fifth on my redraft board. And I totally think it's fine if somebody wanted to make the argument that
I definitely know you had above him.
Yeah, well, I totally think it's fine to see Cade anywhere from, honestly, like 1 to 6 on anybody's sure. redraft board. But I think that just illustrates kind of like what you said off the top, that like you were just going to go ahead and take him. Again, Cade, still 21 years old. The team has not been fully formed around him. He's still kind of finding his way. We know how good of a shooter he was at Oklahoma State. He has not shown that. In fact, in the, again, small 12-game sample size of this season, he was actually worse from three on just about the same volume, 31% from three last year, 28% in his 12 games this season. So, like, based on his output, I could not take him that high. But the upside, like, I don't think his ceiling is any lower than it was on draft night, even with the slow start to his career, statistically.
Yeah, and, like, you look at the start, like, the 12 games he played this season, obviously an incredibly small sample size, but mm-hmm. just under 20 points, 6 assists. And you have to remember, like, his first two seasons in the NBA were the two seasons that Jeremy Grant was in Detroit. Mm-hmm. And Jeremy Grant, as I talked about in an article that's going to be up at FTN Fantasy, mm-hmm. Really became a high usage go-to, you know, run the offense through type of player. It was like 28% usage his first season in Detroit, 25% his second season. So I was excited to see now with Grant in Portland, I was excited to see Cade Cunningham kind of even see more opportunities. And, you know, he was on pace to have a pretty solid start. Obviously, the 3-point opportunities weren't, or the 3-point percentage wasn't there, but I still think just the pedigree and the fact that it's mostly been injury related, I'm still fine with him at 3. But like you said, like if you put him 1 through 5, like I think that's not just the fact that the injuries can kind of cloud things, but the fact that this draft class was really, really good, as we'll talk about, especially on the, you know, next couple, you know, spots here. So you have the fourth overall selection now. Where are you going?
Yeah, Franz Wagner for me at 4. I had him 3 on my board. Just been great this season. He was really good last season too, just kind of overshadowed by the supreme talent and output that Evan Mobley and Scotty Barnes had last year in their race for Rookie of the Year. And I think maybe Franz overshadowed a little bit by the name and the attraction of Cade Cunningham, of Jalen Green, who was in the dunk contest, things like that, right? Franz, on this extremely youthful, extremely stacked, extremely raw Orlando team, he has been NBA ready to my surprise, for sure. Like, I'll admit, I did not think Franz Wagner was going to be anywhere near this good, like, at least this early. And I didn't see him taking this step this year. Obviously, record-wise, the results have not been there for Orlando, but they've had guys in and out. Obviously, Jalen Suggs, and that's an interesting guy to talk about, I think, from this draft. We'll see if he even shows up in our top 10. It's tough for him to get any meaningful minutes right now, but sticking to Franz and not talking about Jalen Suggs here, 49% from the field, up to 37% from three, on three more shot attempts per game, almost 1.5 more threes attempted per game. He's right at 86%, just where he was last year from the free throw line, 21 points, 4 boards, 3.5 assists, and a steal per game, 2 turnovers per game. That's more than fine from Franz Wagner. And I think really what's keeping him behind Mobley and Barnes for me is the fact that he's not really anywhere near that, like, elite tier of defense. Like, I think I'd say he's kind of an average NBA defender at this point. But you look at, like, and again, there's no one stat that is the end all be all of measuring player performance in the NBA. But if you look at the just win shares from this 2021 draft, Mobley, Barnes, and third is Franz Wagner. And on a team that doesn't have many wins to share, Adam, the fact that he's third just kind of stood out to me when looking at all of the numbers that some of these stat sites can give you. And so, yeah, give me Franz Wagner, because he's putting up these numbers alongside usage sucks like Paolo Banchero, like Cole Anthony, who has started and come off the bench during various periods this year. You've had Wendell Carter Jr. in and out of the lineup, who takes his fair share of shots. And so, yeah, I think Franz is like similar to Cade for me in terms of like where people could have him. I would not say somebody is crazy for drafting him one. I would not say drafting him fifth or sixth is crazy either, because this 2021 draft was pretty darn loaded.
Yeah. And like we talked about a lot in this podcast, it's not just the top tier players. It's players in the second, players that went undrafted, that really elevated this draft class even more. So, yeah, I'm at, what, fifth overall now? This is where I struggled. I struggled between Jalen Green and Josh Giddey. Mm-hmm. Jalen Green, obviously, was the number two selection, which, well, coming, you know, in, what was it, G League Unite?
Mm-hmm. Ignite,
he yeah. had, I mean, he still does have it, obviously, like some of the most insane bounce and athleticism in the entire league. We've seen that multiple times. I think in his rookie season, there was a possession. It was like a Ja Morant type possession where he had a ridiculous block and then, you know, a couple plays later had a thunderous dunk. Like, he is unbelievable. I think he has the ceiling to be like a 26, 27 point per game type of scorer. Mm-hmm. He's had some huge games, especially lately with Kevin Porter Jr. out. The efficiency has been great, you know, but the ceiling is obviously massive. And there's Josh Giddey, who feels like more of a floor because he kind of contributes everywhere. He's averaging, I think, 16 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists so far this season, playing alongside Shai. Defensively, like, Giddey can get lost a lot, but I'm leaning with Giddey here just because I think the overall versatility he has and the ability to kind of play that point forward position. We saw him last year in that stretch because SGA missed a lot of games last season where he was having monster games. You know, his effective field goal percentage has gone up from 46% last year to 52% this year. He's shooting 53% on twos, which is really good. So I'm leaning Giddey. I think Green has definitely more upside to be like I said, a 27 point per game scorer that can, you know, make plays off the dribble, off step backs, you know, slash into the basket. And like he and somebody else we'll talk about on this list for the Houston Rockets are going to be the focal points, unless they get, you know, Wemby or somebody, of this offense for years to come. The thing too that like it's tough to be efficient on this Rockets team when they have like one or two players over the age of 24. I mean, it's just, you know, Jabari Smith, we'll talk about later, he's struggled with efficiency. Like, it's just not an efficient situation right now. So I think Jalen Green is going to have much more efficient days ahead of him. The ceiling is higher, but I'm taking Josh Giddey here at five.
Damn it.
Yeah, I knew once you said you had two players ahead of Cade, I knew the first one was easily Franz, and I definitely knew the second one was Josh Giddey. So.
Yeah, Giddey was four on my board. You know, brought up the December 1st stats last time. Just one more time since December 1st. It's a 23 game sample now. Josh Giddey, 17, 9, and 6 on 51, 38, 91. Thunder still one game below 500. Still a game and a half back of the 5 seed. So yeah, I guess now I have to kind of back into this pick, Jalen Green at 6. I had him at 6 on the big board here, so no issue taking him, and I don't have a ton else to add from what you said. Like, he's got the upside to be not just a top scorer in this league, but I think like his upside is leading scorer in the NBA in some season down the road. To get there, he has to find some semblance of efficiency from the field. And hopefully that just comes with not just his maturation as a player. Again, not quite 21 years old. Birthday coming up on deadline day, actually, February 9th. Jalen Green will turn 21. So not just the maturation of him as a basketball player, but the maturation of this process that Houston is going through rebuilding this roster. I think when you've got a better roster around Jalen Green, he will be able to find more success from the field. But to this point, in his career, 42% from the field, 34% from three, 79% from the free throw line. Certainly not terrible numbers, but I think average at best there. So, yeah, Jalen Green had six, and no issue with it. I wish he would have gone Jalen Green so I could get Josh Giddey. And I know we're not competing here, but I'm always going to have a little competitive taste in my mouth.
The Oklahoma City Thunder, true or false? If you had to choose, they are your second favorite team in the entire league, because we talk about them every episode.
Yeah, you might be right. It helps that they're not in the Southwest Division. Holy God, would that be a juggernaut if they were in there instead of like Houston or somebody?
All right, so let's revisit this. We're what, six spots in?
Yeah,
obviously. More. Yeah. Wait, what'd you say?
I said, yeah, four more. We're just doing top ten.
Right? Oh, I thought you said, oh boy, like another trade happened.
Oh, no. I wish.
That'd be fun. Almost ran to Twitter. So in the actual 2021 draft, the top six went Cade, Jalen Green, Evan Mobley, Scottie Barnes, Jalen Suggs, we have not talked about yet, and Josh Giddey. Mm-hmm. Number seven was Golden State. This player who I'm taking at seven, I think it's probably the easiest selection for me. He was drafted 16th overall. Traded to the Houston Rockets. Mm-hmm. Alperen Şengün. Easiest spot here because, and you can make the case in a month or in a year, could be top three because we're finally seeing the Houston Rockets play through him how they should have for months. I mean, remember last year, especially down the stretch, it was like, why are they not, why is a bad team not playing their young, potential cornerstone of their franchise? And now they're playing through him, and I think I was on stream with Kyle Murray, and we kind of tried to make a comparison because I don't want to call him like a poor man's Jokic because Jokic, in my opinion, is the best player in the league, and nobody's going to come close to Jokic.
Yeah.
But the comparison we had is like when you're playing Mario.
Okay.
And Mario starts off really small, and then you get the power ups and all the other power ups. Like Alperen Şengün is Jokic before those power ups.
So he's got like
like is when he start basic off really Mario? Small. Yeah.
Okay. I would give him a mushroom. He's big Mario. Yeah, like he's big guy.
No more than one though, because I don't like comparing anybody. I don't like comparing anybody to Jokic. You know how I feel about Jokic.
He didn't have that little flamethrower.
You look at the numbers here. Let's look at January when they really started to Steven Silas finally starting to play through him. And obviously they've had some injuries, right? Jabari's missed some time.
Yeah.
KPJ's missed some time, but this had to happen no matter what, right?
Mm-hmm.
Look at these stat lines. They are Jokic-esque to an extent. Sure. Again, not quite Jokic level. He had his first triple-double of his career on January 11th, 10, 10, and 10.
Mm-hmm.
But he's had, his last
that's
game.
That's a Jokic-esque triple-double right there.
This year it is because the usage rate's down for Jokic. But yeah, definitely. You look at his last game he played against Minnesota, 19, 16, 7, 3 blocks. 24, 12, and 6. 33, 15, and 6. 15-8 and 6, 14-6 and 7. He's averaging 18 points, 10 rebounds, and 6 assists per game in the month of January. He is, I don't know if he's there with, he's definitely not there with Jokic, obviously. He's like on the rise behind like Jokic and Sabonis as some of the best passing centers in basketball. He's awesome. And again, like I think this is a pretty easy spot for him to be drafted. You can make the case he could be top five. By the end of the season, he could easily be top five. It's great to see Houston finally playing through him more, and the production's been fantastic. So easiest spot for me other than number one overall is Alperen Şengün, number seven.
So I actually struggled here. I had Şengün eight. No issue taking him at seven at all. This was kind of the first place where I really debated who was coming next on my big board, just to highlight the last six games you talked about, kind of starting with that 10, 10, and 10 triple-double and going through the Saturday game against Minnesota. 19 points, 11 boards, 7 assists, a steal and a half, a block and a half, on 70% shooting, 80% from three. He's 4 of 5. And again, Şengün, not a high volume 3-point shooter, but has been putting up about one per game in this stretch. 54 from the free throw line. So for his free throws, but the rest of it, the best stretch of his career. And this is what you can see from a guy like Alperen Şengün, when he gets the usage, right? When you focus the offense around him. The biggest issue long-term for my guy Şengün is, can he get his defense up to a level where he doesn't get massively targeted by the other team in not just a regular season game, but potential playoff series down the road? He's young enough where I have faith that he's going to be a stalwart in this league for a long time to come. You know, this is a guy who just turned 20 last summer, former MVP of the Turkish League when he was just 18 years old. That's certainly nothing to sneeze. And I think one of my biggest content regrets over the last couple years since I've been at FTN, Adam, is not recording myself during the 2021 draft when the Spurs had the 12th pick and did not pick Alperen Şengün. I was very much in on him from the start, and they instead took Josh Primo, and we all know how that turned out. The Spurs now have nothing for that asset. I would much rather have the big Turk in the middle.
And real quick, before you go to your selection, sure. I mentioned I kind of compared him with Jokic and Sabonis as some of the best facilitating centers in basketball over the last 7 games. Jokic and Sabonis are right at 16.8 potential assists per game. Alperen Şengün, number 3rd among centers at almost 11. So, yeah, it's been fun to watch. And yeah, I agree defensively. Like, again, he's not going to be Jokic. Jokic is probably going to go down as one of the 15 greatest players ever if he keeps this up. But Jokic was looked at as a major, major concern defensively. I would put his ceiling right now as, you know, maybe average to slightly below average, but he made improvements enough to where he's obviously staying on the floor. It helps when you're maybe the most efficient offensive player ever. But yeah, I do agree. You want to see some strides defensively for him so he doesn't get kind of, picked on defensively.
So for 8 for me, Jonathan Kuminga, couple other guys that I think I'd be fine with people taking over him, but I'm just still looking at the overall upside of this player, obviously coming from G League Ignite to the Warriors last season. And again, he doesn't play a ton because of how stacked that Warriors team is. And so I'll use per 36 minutes here on his career, 105 total games with 17 starts, per 36 minutes, 18 points, 7 boards, 2.5 assists, a steal and a block per game, or not per game, but per 36 minutes, excuse me. He's taken a little bit of a step back this season, been in and out of the lineup, obviously just returned from an extended absence. I forget what the specific injury was that he had picked up, but he's back now, and we've seen Jonathan Kuminga flash so many times, 17 career starts, a lot of those coming in games where the Warriors rest, you know, Steph and Clay and Draymond or whatever. And when we see Jonathan
Kuminga, we're not talking about those instances.
When we see Jonathan Kuminga get the opportunity, he has pretty much delivered, or I would say he's delivered the majority of the time so far in his young career. And we saw more so last season than this season, the elite defensive upside that he brings. I think that this season is the downturn we've seen in his defensive stats, particularly his defensive rating. I expect it to be closer to the elite level going forward that we saw last season as he continues to mature in this league. Again, he just turned 20 the week before the season started. So I believe Jonathan Kuminga, I think the youngest of any of these players we have redrafted so far. So yeah, it's Jonathan Kuminga for me. I would, if I'm a team like San Antonio, say, and I'm trying to trade with the Warriors, he is the guy that I want to get back. And you can have almost anything you want from my team if I can get Jonathan Kuminga in return. I think his ceiling is that high.
Devin Vassell?
Probably not.
I agree.
But like I'm saying, like tradable, like you can have Poeltl and Jay Rich and Doug McDermott, and we'll give you a second round pick or so, you know, whatever. It's probably San Antonio is probably not the team to get a deal done with the Warriors for a guy like Jonathan Kuminga. But again, I'm just saying, if I'm another GM and Jonathan Kuminga is at all available, I will sit on my own, what, you know, my whiteboard in the, you know, the coach's offices, whatever they have there. to try to see what type of offers we could make, because I think his ceiling is that high. And like at times last year, I may have even said it on the pod that I thought he was untradeable at points last year. Probably not this year, especially if the Warriors are like making a move, right? Like he's probably one of the guys, him or more likely James Wiseman from that 2020 draft. Like one of those young guys has to move. And again, if I can get my hands on Jonathan Kuminga, I would give up a lot to do it.
Yeah, he would have been my selection here at number 8. So at number 9, a couple ways to go. Mm-hmm. Again, Jalen Suggs still on the board. He went 5th overall. Yep. I'm going Herb Jones.
Yep.
The defensive ability he has shown already. I kind of bring us back to this moment, but last year in the playoffs, this young Pelicans team against the top-seeded Suns, rookie Herb Jones, they had him pressing and meeting Chris Paul, you know, full court, and he held his own. I was really impressed. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you'd like to see more offensively, but like that might not be his game, and that's fine. Especially like, again, I know we're not talking about putting him on a specific team, but especially on the team he's on, when this team's healthy, they don't need him to go out and take 12 shots.
Yeah.
Like, I'm just so impressed with what he does defensively. You can make the case he's one of the 15 best defensive players, at least on the wing, in the league. And for me, you know, obviously, there may not be a higher riser from where he was drafted originally to this, unless you're counting Jose Alvarado. Unless you're counting Jose Alvarado, who didn't get drafted. But I'm going Herb Jones, number 9. Just, you know, I'm a huge fan, and I was really impressed with what he did as rookie. And he's, you know, he's dealt with some injuries as the Pelicans' entire team has, but still overall really impressed. And, yeah, like, obviously, perhaps the highest riser from this class.
Yeah, absolutely the highest riser. I also had him there at 9 on my board. And you mentioned who I had at 10, Jalen Suggs. I'll take him to round out.
So we were pretty close. It's just we had a couple differences. I had Cade a little bit higher. Mm-hmm. I had Alper and Şengün ahead of who'd you take instead
Kuminga.
Of that's right. Yeah. So yeah, we were pretty much any closing thoughts on Suggs? Just haven't seen him. Plus, when he's been on the floor, they've had that logjam at the guard position with Cole Anthony and Markelle Fultz.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing I can say if I'm trying to make the positive case for Jalen Suggs is, like, just because it hasn't quite worked out yet in Orlando, I don't think that means that his upside is all of a sudden gone. Is a little bit, for these guys that we've been discussing, is a little bit on the older side. He will turn 22 at the end of the season, right? I think right about when the NBA Finals start. So Jalen Suggs will be in the gym and not playing competitive hoops at that point of the offseason. But hopefully, I guess I'm hoping for his sake that the Magic will move on from a guy like Cole Anthony and allow Jalen Suggs to play more minutes and continue to develop because he has improved his efficiency slightly this year. There was really nowhere to go but up, especially from three for Jalen Suggs. He was 36-21-77 last year, up to 41 from the floor and 27 from three this year, the exact same amount of three-point attempts per game at 4.1. So you've seen that slight increase from like horrific and one of the worst shooters in the league that's shooting 4 3-pointers a game at 21% his rookie year to still pretty horrendous at 27% shooting 4.1 threes a game. Free throws have fallen off a little bit, both in attempts and percentage, but still at 71%, which is passable, and maybe being a little bit too nice there. But yeah, I had a legit debate, Adam, whether or not I was going to take Jalen Suggs or Trey Murphy the third here, and I would not. You know, we talked about Trey Murphy, I think, 2 episodes back, and just how elite he has been on the offensive end of the floor, specifically from 3. So Trey Murphy could have snuck up there. I believe Trey Murphy was the 17th. pick? Yeah, 17th pick in 2021. But I will go ahead and take Jalen Suggs, who was 5th 2 years ago. So that rounds it out. And so I've been tracking this as we go, Adam. For their draft picks, that they were where these guys were actually selected and where we selected them, it was 3rd, 4th, 1st, 8th, 6th, 2nd, 16th, 7th, 35th, with Herbie there, and then 5th to round out the top 10 for us.
All right, let's move right to 2022, and obviously, you know, smaller sample. We're a little bit over halfway through the rookie seasons for these players, but Would you like the first or second overall selection? Since I just grabbed the first spot.
Give me the first one here. I don't think.
All right, so you're taking Chet.
So I'm not. I'm gonna go ahead and take Paolo again. I would like. I didn't know if we were going back and like assuming health here or anything like that. And if we were, then like yeah, I probably would take Chet. But I don't think it's. I don't think it's right because Paolo has been so good this year for a rookie. You know, the 21 points, 6.5 boards, 4 assists. You know, his shooting that will come. I think just again, kind of like we said with some of the guys in 2021, the maturation of Paolo Banchero in the NBA. He's 44% from the field, 31 from three, 76 from the free throw line right now. But like 15.5 shots per game, he's shooting 4.2 threes. And like I said, I think last episode or the episode before last week when we brought up Paolo, 8 free throw attempts per game is one of the most impressive things that I've seen from him. Because the fact that he's not just pulling up, like he is like him getting to the line 7.5 to 8 times per game. You compare him to somebody like Jason Tatum, who I think not dissimilar from what we think these guys can be. You know, I think you expect Paolo Banchero to where they took him and how good he's been. You expect him to be in the conversation for MVP at some point down the line in his career, you know, 4, 5, 6 years in. But one of the big gripes about Jason Tatum in his first 4 seasons in Boston was that he settled too much. And a lot of people blamed him training and idolizing Kobe Bryant for that. And him trying to replicate Kobe's mid-range game and his turnaround game and his fadeaway game and all that stuff. And Jason Tatum is great at all those things. And is, again, now in his 6th season, after his first NBA Finals appearance last year, certainly in the MVP conversation, I had him 3rd. I don't remember where you had him when we did our, you know, mid-season awards last week. But I know he was at least in the mix for you. Jason Tatum had not shot more than 6.2 free throw attempts per game. That was last year, okay? 3.2, 2.9, 4.7, 5.3. So you can see that getting to the basket and making a point of hunting the paint and drawing that contact and not shying away from it is something that Jason Tatum has been working on since he came into the league 6 years ago at the same age of 19 that Paolo Banchero is, just turned 20 back in November, but again, entered the league as a 19-year-old. The fact that he's already at 8 free throw attempts per game, to me, is just so promising. And again, has a little bit of size on Tatum, I think an inch or two and maybe 15, 20 pounds. But I think similar upside in terms of where we see Paolo getting to here in a few years and where we see Jason Tatum now. The fact that Paolo is already has that aggression in his game. And maybe the fact that he is a little bit thicker, you know, listed at 250 pounds, gives him that confidence that he can go into the paint in an NBA game as a 19 or 20 year old and take that beating and still get to the line and finish through contact and be more than an acceptable free throw shooter at 76% on 8 free throw attempts per game. I maybe have just given the longest argument for why free throw attempts is so important for an all-star level rookie. But I really do think that that is a key indicator in the offensive success that is the elite offensive success.
I mean, look at Shea. Look at Shea this season.
Yes.
I'm not saying like Shea's obviously he can do more than just, but he leads the league in drives by a decent margin. It's like 24 per game. Mm-hmm. He's averaging over 10 free throw attempts per game. And he's also a ridiculously efficient free throw shooter. So it's like, that's why I've been so high on like DeMar DeRozan. I understand like the league has transitioned over the past handful of years to the 3-point shot, but like getting to the free throw line, not only whether you, you know, or just getting to the basket in general, not only whether you make the shot or not, it just puts so much stress on the defense and it's just going to help everything else out. So especially to see that. What do you say, over 8 per game as a rookie?
Yeah, 7.7 right now. So I was rounding
like that's,
up.
That's really, generous, that's impressive. Like,
yeah, dude, like, you look at
I would like, I don't know, like, I don't know if it'd be too much to do while I talk about the next selection, but like, I would like to see some of the like rookie free throw attempts per game for like a lot of these 20 plus point per game scores or like, like, you know, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to be like where Durant and some of these guys maybe have been in terms of, obviously it's not going to be a Kevin Durant, but like, it's very interesting to see like where a lot of these players that have become 25 point per game scorers looked in terms of free throw attempts per game right out of the gates as rookies. So,
well, I can tell you now, Kevin Durant as a rookie, 5.6 per game, then 7.1 on his career. And again, this is what, 15 seasons of KD now, 7.6 free throw attempts per game. So right in line with that 7.7 that Paolo has been putting up. DeMar DeRozan on his career, 6.5 free throw attempts per game. So like,
what was LeBron's rookie season? Because LeBron obviously was more of like, Durant was always kind of mid-range, can shoot the three. LeBron definitely to start his career was just go to the basket, nobody can really stop you.
Well, I would also note you brought up Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Shai's at 10.1 this season. Again, like you mentioned, leads the league in drives, and he is probably the best guy I would assume this season at getting to the free throw line, getting double digits. But the seasons before this, 2.5, 5, 6.5, 7.2. So even
I think
last
he's only
year,
behind Giannis and Embiid and maybe Harden
in free throw attempts. I think Shai is above Harden. I think Harden is single digits this year.
Yeah, then LeBron, it's definitely Giannis and Embiid. Then it's probably Shai number three.
LeBron, his rookie year was 5.8, but quickly up to 8, 10, 9, 10, 9.5, 10.
But still, like, since LeBron 7.7 as a rookie is really good.
Since LeBron moved to Miami, has never shot more than 8.4 free throw attempts per game. And since 2013, his third year in Miami, no more than 7.7, that Paolo number, in any of the previous 10 years from where we sit today. So again, that is a key, like free throw attempts is a key indicator for star players on what their actual offensive ceiling is. And Paolo at 7.7, after we've been through some of the more notable, you know, guys in terms of like drawing fouls is a skill. And James Harden is maybe in history, the best guy at if James Harden was getting fouls called like he was in the NCAA or something like that, he would be nowhere near the player that he is in the NBA. And I'm not faulting him for that. Whether you think he's gaming the system or the way the officials call fouls in the league, like, he has found this part of the game of basketball, at least in the NBA, where he can exploit it. And it takes him from being an elite player to multiple MVP winner, right? Paolo, he's 1A to Chet's 1B in my mind right now.
Yeah, let's get right to it. Chet's number two for me. Hasn't played, obviously, but like we understand the upside. Well, 7'1", 7'6", wingspan, can shoot the three ball. Surprisingly, was like only a 70% free throw shooter in college, but he's shown the ability to facilitate. He's going to make this Thunder team, which we talk about all the time, just way more dangerous. And it's a perfect fit too with what we talk about with Shai and Giddy and driving to the basket.
Yep.
Should be fun to watch. I don't have to go too in depth on Chet. If you want to talk about Chet, go ahead, because I know you had him. What you had him number one during the draft last season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to talk a lot about Chet. I just talked too long, I think, about Paolo, so we can make this quick. You mentioned like the free throws, right? Yeah, 72% from the free throw line in his 1 year at Gonzaga, but 61% from the field on 9 field goal attempts per game, and did shoot almost 3.5 threes per game at a 39% clip. Which, like, if he is anywhere near that in the NBA and on this OKC team, which needs some more shooting, like, if he is bringing that, like, even if Chet is 35% from three in the NBA, like, that is going to be elite for his size. And again, the 3.7 blocks per game, like, I understand that Joel Embiid would probably not struggle with the size of somebody like Chet Holmgren, but again,
what is he, like, 195?
Yeah, something like that. But I also don't Embiid, think that Chet Holmgren needs to be 250, 260 pounds to have a very successful, if not like an all-star level career in this league. I just think the upside, the two-way upside of Chet Holmgren, again, is what made me so excited to, in a mock draft or on my fake big board, right, have him number one last season. Certainly not a hot take, but I'm super excited to see what he does when he gets healthy.
All right, number three. Are we sticking with OKC?
We actually aren't. And this may be a what have you done for me lately. And what he has done for the Sacramento Kings lately has been very, very good. I will take Keegan Murray because just again, and I don't think I'm going to throw my December 1st date out here. We can probably have a little bit of a smaller sample here, but Keegan Murray has been great from the field over the last, I don't know, month or so. We can go ahead and pull up his numbers from January. Keegan Murray, well, let's see, since January 1st. Keegan Murray, coming off what was a massive game against OKC on the 20th, so back on Friday night, 29 points, 14 boards, and an assist. He's just doing everything that this team is asking him to do, whether it was come off the bench to begin the season or now slide into the starting lineup, you know, I don't know, it was like 8 to 10 games into the regular season. But then you're out there with Domantas Sabonis and De'Aaron Fox and Kevin Huerter and even Harrison Barnes. Keegan Murray is option number 5, or has been option number 5 in this Kings rotation. And we've talked about how good they have been, Sacramento here. We are now, I'd say, well past the halfway point with 45 games in the books for Sacramento. Sacramento, the 3 seed in the West. And Keegan Murray playing a big role. Like, if we are going to give, and I'm not comparing him to these two players because I would certainly take Evan Mobley or Scottie Barnes over him, but if we're going to give Evan Mobley and Scottie Barnes their flowers for being such a big part of winning teams last season, we have to do the same for Keegan Murray this season. And I think that he will develop into a player that is doing a little bit more on both ends of the floor as both he matures and Sacramento, some of these pieces that they have right now fall off as their careers continue, you know, specifically Harrison Barnes. I think like Keegan Murray will be taking over that Harrison Barnes role sooner rather than later. And just, he's been really, really good since January 1st. Okay, this is 11 games so far this month. Keegan Murray, 14 points, 5.5 boards, 1.5 assists, half a steal, half a block per game. Also only turning it over half a time per game, which is great. And again, as the, at best, third or fourth option in this starting lineup. He doesn't get a ton of attempts, 9.5 attempts per game, 6.5 of those are from 3. Not really a slasher, so I didn't really expect this guy to be in our elite free throw attempt conversation. Only 1.5 free throw attempts per game. I'm not going to hold that against him now because he is shooting, Adam, 51, 49, 93. In the month of January. So Keegan Murray coming into his own here as the calendar turned to 2023. And if he keeps this up, he's going to be a big reason why Sacramento not just holds a playoff spot, but may finish, like, maybe hosting a fucking playoff series here in about 2.5 months. So Keegan Murray, somehow, I would not have thought this would happen, but he is my third pick here.
Yeah, like 3 through 5 was really tough for me. Mm-hmm. Murray was in the discussion. And then, of course, Jabari Smith and Jalen Williams.
Are you going to OKC here?
I'm not going to lie to you. I'm deciding right now.
Okay.
Because we've talked a lot about Jalen Williams and how fantastic he's been. Obviously, he's, you know, he didn't go anywhere near as low as Herb Jones in the draft, but like he's a riser in his own right still.
Absolutely.
I think he went, what, 12th or something?
I think it was 13th. 12th. 13th. You're correct.
12th? Okay. Yeah. So, Jalen Williams, the obviously number one reason why this OKC team is exceeding expectations, at least this season, is Shea. Mm-hmm. Number two, you can make the case, is Jalen Williams.
Yeah.
Even ahead of Giddey, because we already knew Giddey was really good.
Yeah.
But Jalen Williams is giving this team a third viable ball handler.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get to the free throw line, obviously, like Shea or Giddey, but he likes to drive to the basket. He's got a good enough handle.
Yeah.
But, and again, it's, I talked about the efficiency issues for Houston. Jabari Smith, for me, is not a 31% three-point shooter.
Sure.
Like, I don't believe that's what we're getting from him. Again, he shot, what, almost over 40%, 42% from 3 at Auburn in 2021, 2022. That's on 5.5 three-point attempts per game, which for college basketball is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Like 5.5 threes per game in college is a ton.
Mm-hmm.
He has the incredible length, 6'10", 220. The shot releases. Like, I think it's just it's a, you know, he hasn't been great. Been a little bit banged up. If you want to maybe say, okay, Jabari Smith for me, I'm going with him here. Jalen Williams is right behind him, though. I would have Jalen Williams up next. Sure. I just think Jabari Smith's upside is still higher by a decent bit. And I just don't believe he's a, I think he's shooting like 31% from three or something that low. I don't believe that's what we're going to get from Jabari Smith. And like, again, like it's just, maybe he gets like, he's been a little bit banged up since Alperen Şengün has taken on this role. He could benefit from the offense running through Şengün a lot more. So
sure.
I'm leaning Jabari Smith here. I think the upside is still really, really high. But again, if you had Jalen Williams, like we talked about a couple weeks ago, as the number three player in a redraft for this class, I don't think you're crazy.
Yeah, and I had Jalen Williams at four. I had Jabari Smith at five. No argument there, because I think all the points you made certainly hold true. My big worry with Jabari, and it has been since college, like obviously he was an elite college player, especially college scorer. You mentioned the three-point shooting. I do think that comes up as he continues to mature. Again, now that we're here into the 2022 redraft, we've got even younger guys on our hands. Jabari Smith won't turn 20 until May, so it'll be about a month after his first season ends that he actually turns 20. So I have no worries about Jabari Smith at this point. Outside of the worries that I already had is that he's just kind of a spot-up shooter. More than half of his shot attempts in college came from beyond the three-point line. More than half of his shot attempts in his rookie season here in the NBA have come from behind the three-point line. And if he is shooting that elite percentage, you know, if he's any, if, even if he's 40% from three, I have no issue with that. You know, the 42% that you mentioned, like his year at Auburn, that's even better. But he was 43% from the field while shooting 42% from three at Auburn. And like, while it doesn't hold quite as close together here, 39% from the field, 39% from the field is awful. And so we can't say that he has been good. But I also think as this kind of like Şengün in the 2021 redraft, I do think that Jabari Smith will, his stats and just overall the results of Houston will improve as they continue to move down the road here to whatever their, you know, this the new iteration of the Rockets, because this team will be good at some point in the next few years. They're just not quite there yet, and Jabari's still finding his way. I don't think I need to rehash too much on Jalen Smith. If anybody has been listening over the last week, we gushed about Jalen Smith last week. He is another big piece to the OKC puzzle and another big reason why they are a winning team right now, even though they are still a game below 500 in the standings. We illustrated why Jalen Smith, playing Jalen Smith more, has led to a winning record over that period. I think I used that December 1st date last time. So if anybody wants that more extended talk on Jalen Williams, they can go ahead and listen to that episode from last week. And I'll just say here, he will be the fifth pick for me.
All right, so number six, I had these players back to back. I'm going to go Benedict Mathurin, though. Mm-hmm. Been a high usage player off the bench for a lot of the season for the Pacers since the injuries they've had. He's been in the starting lineup a lot more. Yeah, like he's got an outside shot to win sixth man of the year as a rookie. Now, he probably needs to get back to playing, coming off the bench once Tyrese Haliburton's back to do that. But I think he has the ability to be like a really, really good like third option on offense. I think that's probably, I don't know if you want to measure number two option on like a, you know, contending team, but he's been, you know, he's been scoring the ball pretty well in a variety of ways. I debated between him and Shaedon Sharpe, but I'll go Benedict Mathurin.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Nothing really to add. I think that's pretty astute. I don't think I disagree with the idea that the ceiling for Ben Mathurin, at least on a good team, right, a winning team, a team that's contending, is probably that third option. But 17 points per game is nothing to sneeze at, especially for a guy that's been coming off the bench for this Pacers team. And again, the Pacers obviously overperforming, even though they have lost now seven in a row, the full season context have been overperforming and still sitting in that ninth seed out east. Adam, I don't think it's crazy if we're sitting here next Monday and we see Indiana and Toronto have swapped places and Toronto is into that play-in and the Pacers have dropped down. Losing Tyrese Haliburton is just too much for this Pacers team to really get past and continue this winning streak. I'll take at six here, or at seven, excuse me. I'll take Jaden Ivey. also been disappointing, especially after he got off to a very strong start. And I think a lot of his early success was tied to playing next to Cade Cunningham. So, like, Jaden Ivey's stats were better when he was next to Cade, while Cade's stats were still pretty poor. And you would, I would have thought, at least, or I did think, that when Cade went out, that we were going to have a potentially, like, Jaden Ivey Rookie of the Year campaign incoming. And that's just not what happened. Obviously, Killian Hayes stepped in, and he's been playing some of the best basketball of his young career, which, again, wasn't a high bar for him to clear. But Jaden Ivey, again, not shooting well, 41% from the field, 32% from three, 73% from the free throw line. Has not been extremely impressive. But I'm also not surprised if we did this exercise a year from now, and Jaden Ivey had bumped up a few spots. I do think he improves statistically. Again, a lot of these guys who are taken at the top of these drafts are on teams that are just not ready to win yet. So some of them, I think, maybe it's an excuse, but I wouldn't write off Jaden Ivey just because the first 44 games of his NBA career haven't been stellar. We know the scoring upside that he has, and I still had him over Ben Mathurin in my ranks, with Shaedon Sharpe right behind him. So I assume you're going to take Sharpe here, but it's really interesting. And I think you can tell, by the order of the picks from our 2021 redraft that we just did. And when I read those off, how it kind of jumped around, like, you know, we had 3 and 4 go first. We had 8 go fourth. We had the 16th pick and the 35th pick in there. I don't think we're going to have any of these quite yet, now that we're just only a half season into these rookies. In 2022, and you can see it so far. We have gone 1, 2, 4, 3, 12, 6, and 5. So it's a lot tougher, I think, for us to discern how to prioritize these guys like Ivy, Mathurin, and Sharpe. And I really have no argument against anybody putting them in any order here.
Yeah, and I will be going with Shaedon Sharpe up next. Again, he hasn't played a ton, right? He's started 5 games. He's playing just under 20 minutes per game, 7.4 mm-hmm. points, 32% from 3 on 2.6 attempts. He is shooting 55% on 2s because he can get to the basket. Yeah. He has is he in the dunk contest?
I believe so. And I'm actually, like, yeah, I'm actually really excited for this dunk contest.
Yeah, he's going to win. He's going to win.
He's
going to win. It's Mac McGlung.
Yeah, Sharp. KJ Martin. And Shaedon Sharpe.
Yeah, Shaedon Sharpe is ridiculously athletic. Mm-hmm. And again, like if we saw him in a role where he was playing, even like in Benedict Mathurin's situation, but, like, you know, in a situation where he's starting and playing 30 plus minutes, he could easily be third or fourth in this redraft. Mm-hmm. We just haven't seen enough of him yet on a consistent basis, because they have Jeremy Grant there. They have Josh Hart there. They obviously have Dame and Simons handling most of the usage on the offense. Especially now Gary Payton's back, so that's going to even hurt the minutes potentially even more for Shaedon Sharpe. But the ceiling is obviously massive with the athleticism, the wingspan. I think he's solid defensively. Not a terrible step back jump shot either, I've seen in a couple highlights. But the athleticism is just massive. So, yeah, I'd like to see him get some more minutes down the stretch in the second half of the season. But from what we've seen, in a little bit of a limited, sample size, there was no reason to have him outside the top 7 or 8.
Yeah, I am right there with you. I'm excited for when Portland finally blows this up. And also, let me shit talk Portland a little bit more, because that's one
of
my
favorite pastimes. If they blew it up last year, you probably wanted them to.
Yeah.
Shaedon Sharpe would probably be playing like 33 minutes a game and would be
maybe Rookie of the Year. Who knows?
Yeah.
Like, he is going to be, or has the chance to be, really, really good. Potentially Tracy McGrady level good. Like, that may be a little bit lofty. But I think he has that type of raw basketball talent in him. So, again, no issue if Sharpe went, I think as high as 6 in this redraft. This is 9th pick here. Give me my guy, Dyson Daniels, at 9. I believe he was picked 8th in last year's draft. I'm a big fan of what I think this guy can be. I'm not sure he's ever going to be an elite scorer, but he's going to contribute in all 5 categories and has the potential to be an elite defensive player. His you know, his offense, again, still leaving a little bit to be desired, but that's not really what the Pelicans need out of him at this point. So if he was on a worse team, maybe Dyson Daniels does get a little bit more offensive opportunity in terms of his shot attempts, but the defense has been there right off the rip. Again, I think playing with G League Ignite last year helped Dyson Daniels a lot, adjusting to the NBA level, the speed of the game. That's one. I'm a huge fan of the initiative there with G League Ignite. And again, like, he has not been terrible on offense. He just doesn't shoot a ton. 44% from the field, 33% from three. I think is perfectly acceptable for what we should have expected from Dyson Daniels here in his rookie season. His year last year with G League Ignite, you know, you saw a little over 10 field goal attempts per game. He did shoot 48% from the floor and 37 from three on 3.2 3-point attempts per game. So again, like, that scoring ability is there. I don't think he's probably, this is not a guy who's going to average 25 points per game in his career or probably in any single season, but I do think he could be like a, you know, 16 points, 8 rebounds, 8 assists type of player, who's elite on the defensive end. And with the size that he has, I mean, Dyson Daniels is 6'8", 200 pounds, plays point guard. Like, he is going to be a big time threat, a two-way threat in this league. And so I'm more than happy taking him at 9. He was a guy that I really wanted the Spurs to get at 9, and the fact he went at 8. Jeremy Sochan looks okay, and I think maybe I'm being a little bit nice. Jeremy Sochan has not been good, but I'm not tripping too much as a Spurs fan because I don't need him to be good this year. I need him to be good in the future. So hopefully he just Sochan will continue to develop or just develop at all. I don't think he's done much good at all so far this season. And Jeremy Sochan, not somebody I think probably most people would have thought I would have brought up the only Spur here. And he was like 14th on my list.
Yeah. He's not even in my top 12.
Yeah. He shouldn't
so
be.
To close it out at 10, this is the hardest selection I've had to make today.
I don't think you're going to take my guy, and I'm going to demand an honorable mention if you don't.
So I'm debating between three players.
Okay.
The, I believe, youngest player in the NBA, Jalen Duren.
Okay, yeah.
AJ Griffin.
Okay.
Who's quietly had a really solid rookie season for Atlanta.
He has.
And Walker Kessler.
Yeah, none of those were my guy. And I also have another player that I had above those guys.
Okay.
Duren, I think, is a fine pick.
Yeah, like, it's tough between Kessler and Duren because over the last 15 games, they've been two of the better rebounders in basketball. During that span, Kessler's averaging 9.5 rebounds per game. Duren's averaging 9.4. Mm-hmm. Kessler, on the defensive end, has been really good.
Yeah.
We've seen that. We saw that in college. Jalen Duren, though, 19 years old, like, I was so high on him coming into the draft. Mm-hmm. I thought Charlotte was crazy for not trying to. Well, he was he the draft day trade?
I believe so. Yeah, I think they take Duren. And
yeah,
they
so there was a 3-team deal with Detroit. Yeah. The Hornets originally drafted him. I thought they should have just drafted Jalen Duren and moved on.
Yeah.
that and Mark Williams has been solid for them, but like Jalen Duren, his upside at 19. Mm-hmm. I should say though, you didn't specify which Jalen Williams you were drafting.
J-Dub. Not big.
but no, I'm going to go Jalen Duren. Just because I've kind of talked about it a lot today. I'm just chasing the upside. I think Walker Kessler has been fantastic for Utah. Mm-hmm. But Jalen Duren at 19, like, just give me that upside. So I'm interested to see who your player is, though. That the fact that it wasn't Kessler, wasn't. I know you love another player that's on the Thunder.
Yeah, it's him. It's
Usman. Is it? Okay.
Usman Jang is going to be fucking good. I also wanted the Spurs to take him over Jeremy Sochan. Another guy that doesn't turn 20 until May this season. Originally from France, did play his 18-year-old season in the NBL out there in Australia. I actually think, no, New Zealand, excuse me. Don't want to upset any of the people down under, so getting that right. Didn't play a ton for that team. I believe he was with the Breakers. That is the best team in that league. So as an 18-year-old, he only played about 20 minutes per game, which, again, international basketball is 40 minutes. So he played about half the games on average. or half of a game on average, and didn't shoot great 40% from the floor, 27% from three, and 67% from the free throw line out there in the NBL. But if you look at like his stats in the second half of the year out there in the NBL, that's when he really started to pick things up. His minutes increased. He played four games, of 30 or more minutes in the second half of that season, put up a few stat lines like 17, 9, and 3 with a steal in 28 minutes, 20 and 4 in 25 minutes, 18, 4 and 1 with 5 stocks in 22 minutes. In the playoffs, the semifinal there, 22, 6 and 6 with 4 stocks in 30 minutes. Usman Jang is going to be a good two-way player, in my opinion, at worst. Again, he's extremely young, and he is one of those players that, like, you certainly wouldn't have to pay, I wouldn't think, as much to get an Usman Jang as you would somebody like Jonathan Kuminga. But he is another young player that I would have a ton of interest in adding to my team if I'm in any sort of rebuild mode. Usman Jang, who just got healthy, was the 11th pick last year, and I guess technically now the 11th pick in our redraft. I just think his upside, like this kid is 6'10", about 215 pounds. I think he can add probably 5 or 10 pounds there and not lose any of the agility that he has on the defensive end. Over 7-foot wingspan, like Usman Jang is going to be a problem. He can guard 1 through 4, and I think potentially some fives depending on the matchup. So I am very high on Usman Jang still halfway through his rookie season. He's only made 14 appearances so far. But you've seen some of the defensive metrics look, I wouldn't say great just quite yet, but nothing is changing me off that trajectory that I think he has so far. Just because of the limited sample size we do have, I don't think he, let me just, before we finish this off, Adam, let me see. The G League has been a little bit finicky with their stats and the availability, how much of those stats we can see. But I have found now here his G League stats from this season at the Showcase Cup and then the one regular season appearance he made, which I believe was last week. He played 11 games in the Showcase Cup for the Oklahoma City Blue, 16 points, 9 boards, 4.5 assists, 2 stocks per game on 45, 35, 70 in that Showcase Cup. And then the one regular season G League game he played, 33 minutes in that one, 20 points, 9 boards, 2 assists, and 2 stocks. Usman Jang's fucking good, and I don't think anybody knows about it.
The Thunder.
Yeah.
They are the team of the podcast, without question.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
I mean, maybe not unfortunately. They look.
Hey, if they give us some of those young guys, San Antonio being us, yes, I'm using us still. Then I love them. If not, I just wish we still had Sam Presti.
That was fun though. Two redrafts, 2021 and 2022. I think it went about how I thought it would. Nothing too crazy, I don't believe. I will say honorable mentions for that 2022 class, Walker Kessler, AJ Griffin. I'll put Jeremy Sohan in there as well. Not sure if anybody else stands out. Mark Williams is just the Hornets, mm-hmm. for whatever reason, not playing their young players.
Yeah.
Just weird. But Mark Williams a little bit more
is good too. What? I think Mark Williams is really good.
Yeah, it's just they're playing Plumlee 33 minutes a game.
Yeah.
On a team that's going to win 25 games.
I would be hurting my brand if I also didn't say the words Tari Eason on this podcast.
Yeah,
so there you go.
He was right there for me. It's just he's mostly played, I feel like, when they've been missing KPJ, Jabari, whoever, and it just hasn't been enough for us to fully see him. But again, another team that should just – well, that's a bad example because their entire team is young, so they have to play young guys other than Eric Gordon. So
yeah. But even the second round last year, there's still some names that a year or two from now we may be talking about more. Andrew Nembhard was technically a second-round pick, albeit the first pick of the second round this past year. Caleb Houston has gotten some minutes, 30 appearances for the Magic. I don't know if he's long for the league, but again, has played 30 games, which is nothing to sneeze at for a second-round pick. Christian Coloco. has played 40 games for
Christian Brown, the Raptors. I believe.
Christian Brown was late, or not even late first. 21st pick.
That's right.
There for Denver, but Pig Williams there for OKC at 34. Max Christie has played 29 games for the Lakers. Jaden Hardy, obviously, we've talked about him before. I'm a big Jaden Hardy fan. 20 games for the Mavs. Kennedy Chandler also, I think, going to have an NBA career. He's played 22 games for the Grizzlies. So, yeah.
Oh, I mean, he was drafted by the Grizzlies, so he's going to be a borderline starter in a year or two.
So. Right. So, he was actually drafted by the Spurs and then traded to the Grizzlies. So, I just had to say that.
Well, that'll do it for us. We'll be back one of these days this week before the weekends doing, like I said, going to give Zach some time.
Yeah.
You know, get ready, light a candle, get all of the screens up and go through the trade machine. We're going to do a trade deadline kind of preview. It's going to be a lot of fun. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review the podcast on iTunes. All that stuff helps us out. I also have an article up at FTN Fantasy. Just went live about an hour or so ago. My all underrated team. It's 5 players and a 6-man. Just some of the players. You've definitely heard me talk about them on this podcast. So a lot of the players shouldn't be too surprising. But yeah, some more basketball content that's not exactly fantasy related, but it's NBA content, and I think it'll fit. Especially, I'm going to be doing it during the All-Star break while we won't have fantasy basketball stuff to really look to. Mm-hmm. So be sure to check that out, and of course all the streams and stuff like that. Recording this on Monday, Zach. You and Eddie tonight?
Yeah, me and Eddie tonight. Little 7-game slate. I know Tuesday that's me and David. It looks like the NBA pretty much smoothing out the schedule here as we've come into the new year, which is great from a DFS perspective and honestly a content perspective. None of us like those 13 or 14 game slates on the content side of things. Looks like we do have double digits on Wednesday, but nothing too crazy. Looks like 10 games even there, 6 on Thursday, 5 on Friday. Big Saturday slate, man, and a triple header on ABC, so I don't really know what's going on there. I guess because now we're into, Adam, if I can, just for a second, acknowledge the existence of the NFL. Those two games will be played on Sunday. So a triple
I have no
header.
Clue what you're talking about by those two games, by the way. I literally don't even know what you're talking about.
A triple header on ABC on Saturday. So
that's like the throwback. Season. That's like the throwback Saturday ABC schedule.
I love it. Basketball in full effect. It's basketball season, Adam. Football, a distant thing of the past, and it's the best time of year.
Still no clue what you're talking about. but yeah, appreciate everybody listening. We'll be back later this week for some trade breakdown, which is just, you know, it's just part of the process on this episode, on this podcast by now. So thanks for listening as always. Have a great week. We'll see you guys next time on the FTN NBA podcast.
Thanks for listening to the FTN NBA podcast. Be sure to follow the hosts on Twitter at APPfeiffer24 and KAWissenbergDFS.